lessons learned from Lane. Hawaii residents are urged to stay vigilant as a second storm, Miriam, has formed in the East Pacific, though it's too early to say whether it presents any kind of threat to us here. The priority now for the Big Island in Maui is getting the communities back to normal. Over the weekend, Maui Mayor Alan Arakawa had high praise for county workers, particularly firefighters, who managed to prevent even more catastrophic losses to our community. And also kudos to the Board of Water Supply workers who hiked tough terrain during the height of the storm, putting themselves at risk to maintain basic services. Now, Kauai Mayor Bernard Carvalho, who was worried like all of us here on Oahu, he's relieved. He joins us live on the line. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Captain. Aloha.
So, yeah, big relief.
Big relief. Big relief here on Kauai, especially because of the April flooding, right, that we had experienced several months ago, and then the potential of this coming our way. But thank goodness it didn't happen as much. So we're good.
Right. And you folks have yet to rebuild everything. I mean, it just happened.
That was my major concern, that we're in the rebuilding of the roadway and securing it and making safe. And, you know, right now as we speak, only residents are allowed in and out of that area on the North Shore. So that was a major concern. But, you know, again, we went through what we went through right now, and everything is moving forward.
It is pretty remarkable when you think of the rainfall on the Big Island. Just astounding.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I've been in communication with Mayor Kim, and, of course, just seeing all of that flooding and everything, you know, happening on the Big Island as well. So we understand, we know, so we're all providing our support. We didn't get as much of the brunt of the storm. So, you know, I open up our doors. Any kind of help we can afford our fellow mayors, we put it out there as well.
And what about on the subject of preparedness just for your community?
You know what? I feel we had a good, solid team. We didn't even have to activate a full-on emergency operating center because we were always in a watch, but we did it anyway. So we had a good, solid team in place with team from the FEMA office in Washington, D.C. that came. We also had representation for a search and rescue team that came in from San Diego, along with our core team right here, just watching and making sure that everything is covered because we still were experiencing the past, you know, repair and maintenance of our roadways, like I said, and just being ready and prepared. And I felt as mayor of the county of Kauai, Niihau, we were very prepared, and at least everybody were on standby. We made sure that that was secure.
Right. You know, on one point, I know there is an effort to rebuild, and a lot of folks want to rebuild their homes, but a lot of those homes were on cesspool, I think. So what's the plan going forward? Will they be required to upgrade?
Yeah, you know what? We've been in full conversation with that. We continue to work closely with the Department of Health, whose the jurisdiction falls under that, under the Department of Health. We're evaluating all the different residential cesspools in the state, and we're looking at prioritizing what is the right method, what's the format, what should we do? Not only on Kauai, I think we got to address this statewide. And once we come up with one footprint, if you will, I think that will resonate with all counties, and that's what I'm looking forward to as mayor.
How far out do you think that's going to be?
We're in the conversation right now as we speak. We're already addressing it locally anyway, but we come up to some kind of rules and regulations where we got to make sure we tie into the Department of Health. So that's one of the more concerning areas. More of a long-term plan to upgrade everything, but at the same time, we got to look at it short-term as well. And so trying to really navigate to some of the challenges there.
Right. There's always a silver lining. So if we can
There's
make it better.
There's always a silver lining, yes. And very, very important issue for all of us as we continue to address, you know, our environment in general. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much, Mayor. We appreciate you sharing time with us.
Mahalo for the opportunity. Aloha.
Aloha. Thanks again to Kauai Mayor Bernard Carvalho joining us live from the Lihue Airport. Now, FEMA and county officials began going door-to-door yesterday to assess damage due to the record rainfall and wind-related damage. This morning, we checked in with Hawaii Emergency Management's Executive Officer Luke Myers, who just started his new job.
Right now, we continue to work with our federal and local partners. The major impacts that we have seen have been on the Big Island in Hawaii County. Over 100 homes had some type of flood damage. They are actively doing damage assessments today, yesterday, and tomorrow over the next few days to determine how bad and how severe the impacts are. Obviously, there's also a number of public works and transportation impacts on the Big Island, but with over 50 inches of rain at multiple rain gauges on the Big Island, that's where we've seen the biggest impact. Maui County has also reported back to us. Obviously, we had the fire situation in the Lahaina area, and there were a number of homes and structures that were impacted. Those numbers are still being looked at, and they also had a pretty big blockage of a culvert, basically, that blew out a road. So those are the major two areas that we are still looking at and trying to do assessments. We also heard from our partners here on Oahu from City and County of Honolulu. They had some minor stuff. Obviously, we had the fire out on the Waianae coast, but all those impacts have been mitigated, and Kauai County, they're pretty normal at this time. So we continue to lean forward and work with FEMA and our other federal partners and with the counties to ensure that we're able to document damages and to potentially prepare for some type of short and long-term recovery assistance from FEMA if we're able to justify the amount of damage.
When do you expect to get that report done, this week?
Yeah, we're hoping by later on Thursday or Friday that we should have some preliminary numbers, and then we'll try to work those from the inside. But we're shooting for the end of the week, potentially.
And there was a team from FEMA that was here and dispatched to various islands. How did that work out?
It was actually really great coordination. FEMA's learned a lot of lessons from the hurricane season last year. They pre-deployed. They had resources in place. We were able to bring over some urban search and rescue teams, too, which actually helped out on the island of Maui. And are currently there's a team that's on the Big Island. So that partnership and relationship with FEMA is very important, and I think that they've learned a lot of lessons. And the hurricane season is young, so everything that we can do now to prepare for the rest of the season and be involved with them is vitally important.
And there is another hurricane that's formed, I think, in the eastern Pacific.
Yes, yeah, so we are watching. There's a tropical storm, Miriam, that's out there. We actually started one of our weather calls today, tropical cyclone calls, with the Weather Service and our county partners, one, to make sure for life safety conditions currently, the status, but two, looking out. Right now, that projected path, according to the National Weather Service, is expected to be kind of east of the islands and move away, but we are actively watching it, and we will wait for future guidance from them.
And what's the message that you want to get out there? We did dodge a bullet with Lane.
Yeah, so I think it's important with all the survivors that we had from Hurricane Lane, we did have a number of impacts. Oahu and Kauai may have dodged a bullet, but on the Big Island and on Maui, there were some pretty good impacts. And so, yes, as a state, some may say that we dodged a bullet, but overall we will have some short-term and long-term recovery issues for those two islands. Moving forward, the hurricane season is young. We asked those that stocked up on hurricane supplies before Hurricane Lane to keep those, make the best use of them, not return them to the stores, and be vigilant. Listen to your officials and take any preparedness measures you can, because you never know when a new incident is going to arise.
So if you found yourself flat-footed, the stores are stocking up, go out and be prepared as you can, I guess, is really the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. As soon as those shelves get filled back up, take a chance to relook at your emergency supply kit and refill it and get ready for our next test.
Okay. And so what was the experience like for you since you've just come on board?
Being in the islands for less than a week, it was a great opportunity to see all of our federal, state, and local partners work in the same sandbox together and play. Disasters tend to bring out the best in everyone. We're a very resilient community here, from the public to our various partners in government and the private sector. So it was a unique opportunity to meet many of them in the first week on the job that traditionally that may take months, if not years sometimes. So I appreciated the opportunity to work with them and look forward to working with them in the future.
Wow, so you got exposed to a lot of faces. Now you have to remember everybody's names.
That is correct. I have a lot of business cards that I need to associate some faces with, so.
Okay, all right. Anything else that you think be important to note?
Just that our overall message is to be prepared. You never know when an incident can occur. Get to know your neighbors, get to know your coworkers, and leverage them as a resource. And most of all, we appreciate you all pushing the message out to preparedness, because it takes a family to be prepared.
Luke Myers is a newly appointed executive officer for the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency. In today's Backyard Quiz, we're waxing nostalgic about trains, specifically the time when railroads crisscrossed Hawaii Island. In the first half of the 20th century, you could ride the Scenic Express that ran along the Hamakua coast and offered spectacular views of the ocean, cliff sides with plunging waterfalls, and the dense vegetation along the shoreline. Now, the tracks ran across trestle bridges over deep ravines, and passengers who had the nerve were invited to get out and admire the breathtaking vista when the Scenic Express stopped in the middle. The train had carpeted cabins with wicker furniture and a menu that included consommé and tas, fresh fruit and pot roast. Fine dining, a gracious service, and not a plastic utensil in sight. What a way to travel. Well, this morning we're looking for the name of the railroad line. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets our reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Aloha, I'm Anders Osborne from New Orleans, Louisiana. You're listening to The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
Starting to get back to normal following our wild weather. We spoke with the Hilo Chamber of Commerce head, Gordon Takaki, this morning about the resiliency of small businesses to weather the lava fallout and now this latest natural disaster.
With the lava, we were through a lot. That probably has more of an impact because that seems to be more long-term as opposed to the storm and the flooding and all that. I mean, you saw the photos of the flooding by the soccer field.
Right.
And that's going to go away slowly, draining away, and by the end of the week, it'll be damp. Mushy. They probably couldn't play soccer there, but it'll be okay. There's some other areas, and leading up to how we get to business, but there's some other areas that they're showing the water just coming down like unbelievably crazy. And that's mostly, and the good news above all else, there were no injuries or death reported.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that is just, you know, if you have to ask for the best thing is, that was the best thing. But, you know, from a business perspective, I kind of, the other day I was driving around in the mall area and, you know, there were a few stores closed. Even in the mall, it's right within the mall, there were some stores closed, and they had the signpost said, we'll be closed today or until further notice. But further notice lasted one day. I went back the next day because I'm a mall walker.
Okay.
So I went over to the mall, and gosh, you know, most of them were open. One or two were closed, but... And I got to go back today, get to my walk later on today, so I'll see if anyone, but I'd be surprised if anybody was closed today. And I think, again, a lot of the reason many of them were closed, and this is speculation on my part, is for the safety of the customers and the employees.
Well, what about the impact on the tourist industry?
Some of them did cancel, and depending where they're from, if they're from certain areas of the country where they were flooding, they can relate to that and say, oh my goodness, no, we won't go there, not only for our safety, but we don't want to be in the way of the people that live in the area. But there have been some cancellation. And the other thing is, from an economic standpoint, is those that were already here or there was no way they can leave, there's not a whole lot they could do. I mean, a lot of the places that they would normally visit or a lot were shut down or weren't open for them to partake in the activities. So So that's where some of the economic impact will be. How much of an impact, I think over the next few days, there'll be assessments made, and at that point we'll have a better feel of what were the impact. We had a couple of calls, by the way, the Chamber office did, asking us, should they come? You know, it was like before the hurricane came, but prior to that, like, it was, okay, it's headed our way. And a few phone calls came in that said, should we come? I mean, obviously, we couldn't tell them to not come or come. We just had to be very safe and, you know, check the weather report, check wherever, and you have to make your own decision, of course.
What about any upcoming festivals or events that you folks had in the pipeline?
I think the only, like in Honolulu, a lot of the sporting events for the high schoolers, soccer field, that's the biggest soccer field we've got. And all the soccer field will be affected. We're coming into the football season. And so same thing with football. A lot of the fields will be unable to be used for the football games. But beyond that, I think we're okay. I'm trying to think August. The only big event for Hilo is in the month of September, which is the Great County Fair.
So we just have to keep our fingers crossed for
you
folks.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one. But like I said, coming back to the football field, the soccer field, those are the ones that will be affected the most. And people say, well, that's just kids. There's no economic. There are economic. You know, there are people that are selling the different things at ball games, the rent, and there's many other things that goes on. So, yeah, there'll be some impact on the cancellation. But, yeah, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that occurs this time of the year.
All right, but overall,
like I said again, we won't know. You know, in the next couple of days, we'll have a better assessment. The county and everyone else will start doing their true assessment. We'll be okay. That's my personal perspective. We'll be okay.
That was Gordon Takaki, who is optimistic that the small business community will bounce back after this latest setback to the economy.
Support for The Conversation comes from Mattson, in appreciation of HPR's local public affairs programming. Since 1882, working to support Hawaii's economy and communities. Mattson.com.
Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is a progressive lung condition that makes it hard to breathe. How do you know if you have it? What are the risk factors? I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Join me today on The Body Show. We'll talk about the signs and symptoms to watch out for, who needs to be tested, and why early diagnosis is key. That's today at 6:30 on The Body Show.
Now time for the reality check with our partners at Honolulu Civil Beat. Jessica Terrell tells us about a story about an app that goes beyond the Hawaiian word of the day. Morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so tell us about this Duolingo thing.
Well, Duolingo is an incredibly popular language learning app. They have, I believe, 300 million users. And in September, they're adding Hawaiian to their list of languages. And a lot of people are excited about it. They have like 12,000 people as of this morning on the waiting list to start learning Hawaiian.
Wow. Well, Duolingo is a new word for me. It's a new word in my vocabulary. I wasn't aware of it.
It's been around for a while. They have a lot of different languages on there right now, Spanish. I think they're developing Hindi as well. It's designed to be a bit like a game and kind of keep learning fun. But I think people are hoping it will really raise some awareness about Hawaiian.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. I mean, I know there's been this real resurgence to get more people to speak Hawaiian, the Hawaiian language. It is our official, one of our two official languages. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's an official language of Hawaii, but, you know, a 2016 state study showed that I think only about 18,610 people as of 2016 spoke it at home. So the idea from the folks over at Duolingo and people at Kamehameha schools who are behind bringing Hawaiian to Duolingo is to really expand access to learning the language.
Have you jumped on it? Have you, you know, experienced it? Is it fairly easy to use?
It's fairly easy to use. You can also access it from your computer. It doesn't have to be downloaded onto your phone. I've used it before for other languages, and I'm looking forward to it coming out for Hawaiian. You know, one of the people behind bringing Hawaiian to Duolingo pointed out that I think something like 4 million users in the first 5 years signed up for the Irish Gaelic course. So they're really hoping that millions of people will sign up to learn Hawaiian.
So this actually rolls out next month?
September 9th, I believe, is the date for rolling out. Yeah, but you can sign up now on the Duolingo website to get notified when the course becomes available.
So where do they want to take this?
Well, I think the hope is that people who want to learn Hawaiian here in Hawaii but perhaps don't have access to a classroom or a traditional route will sign up, and then that a lot of tourists and visitors will start learning a bit of basic pronunciation and conversation skills, and that as, you know, thousands, millions, I think is the goal, sign up to use this, it'll just spread quite a bit more.
It's interesting, though, because in most European countries, most folks speak more than one language. And I think in the U.S., there's a tendency to just speak English. There are a myriad of other non-English speakers that, you know, have a second language. But it would be interesting to see how far this app will take the native Hawaiian language.
Yeah, there are a lot of people in Hawaii who speak a second language. On that 2016 survey, Hawaiian was the fifth most commonly spoken language after English at home. So a lot of people speaking other languages. But the point, I think, of the folks developing this course is it's Hawaii. ʻŌlelo Hawaii is an official language here, and people should speak it. So they're hoping that this program will help further that cause.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to jump on that and sign up.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Jessica.
Thanks for having me on.
That was reporter Jessica Terrell with today's Reality Beat, Reality Check. To read the full story, visit sybilbeat.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up on the next On Point, a company called FedLoan services a third of all federal student debt, but flawed paperwork and botched processing are stopping many students from receiving loan forgiveness they're entitled to. We'll find out why. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 2.
Bernice, Emmett, and Lonesome George were treated to a downtown Honolulu stay thanks to Hurricane Lane. Not a big deal, but we're talking snails, endangered ones. We talked with Kapahi, who works with the state's endangered snail program, who is preparing to spend the weekend snail sitting. Now, some 80 endangered native snails were evacuated from a trailer on the windward side of Oahu in advance of Hurricane Lane for fear they would be blown away. It was actually a plan that the state created 2 years ago following Hurricane Julio and Izelle, but it was Lane that triggered its execution. We chatted with Kapahi on Friday about the preparations involved in the department, what the department dubbed snail bail.
While everybody was getting bottled water from Costco, we were getting legal boxes from Office Depot.
Okay.
And all yesterday and the day before, we were prepping the boxes and trying to change out as much vegetation within each chamber so that the snails would have fresh food and fresh fungus to graze on while they're staying here in town.
What do they eat?
So they graze on the biofilm, so the fungus and the algae and bacteria that accumulates on native plants, on the plant surfaces.
Are they picky eaters?
Sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't. We found that when we bring them in from the wild, they won't touch any of the cultured fungus that we grow in the lab for them. But as they become acclimated to their new homes, they actually start to graze heavily on the fungus that we do feed them. So
they warm up to them eventually.
Yeah, they're a bit suspicious.
So tell us why you folks had to, implement this evacuation plan.
Yeah, so currently our captive rearing lab is situated right next to Kauai Nui Marsh, and it's a mobile trailer. It's an office unit. So given that it's right next to a large body of water that's prone to flooding and it's in a trailer that isn't really rated for sustained hurricane winds, we found a need to find some place that would we'd be able to house them without worrying about the walls collapsing around them.
Now, I know when I talked to David Sisko, who I think is the head of that program over there, he had mentioned that people don't realize that these snails could be extinct within a decade, that you folks are just really on like lifeboats trying to keep them safe.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Out in the wild, they're disappearing fast due to introduced predators. And that's not even taking into account, climate change and habitat loss. So
what was all involved? So you folks then had to basically unload the snails that were being kept down there in that trailer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we received word last night that today could have possibly been a lot worse than it is, and that was kind of our trigger to load up. We had four vehicles loaded up with the 2,000 snails that we have, and we all just headed over to town, and we were able to unload within the night. So
they're sharing office space with you.
Yep, and I hope they're comfortable.
So we've never had to do this before. I imagine the offices that they're in now are air-conditioned.
The terrarias that we use are, the typical plastic terrarias that somebody would house, their pet chameleon or like a pet butterfly or something. So they're meant for wildlife. But we have to keep them within a certain range in terms of humidity and within a certain range of temperature. So every so often I'll have to go around and hand spray them with reverse osmosis water, just to make sure that we're not introducing any impurities into their environment. And yeah, so they take a lot of TLC to just keep them happy and keep them alive.
So while these snails are in the offices downtown, I guess they're going to require around-the-clock care then.
Yeah. So I will be staying overnight with them.
Okay, lucky
just
you.
Just to make sure that nothing goes wrong. But as long as the AC is running and everything's, we have power, everything should be pretty hands-off.
Okay, but we really don't know if they're going to like your offices downtown.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's why we're here, is just in case things go bad. We do have a lot of, like, a chest full of ice and 80 or so ice packs that are sitting in the wings waiting if we do need to cool them down further.
Well, do they need cooler temperatures, or?
So they naturally occur at around like 2,000 feet, so the summit areas, and the summit areas are usually a lot cooler. They're around like 65 degrees or so. Within the office space, we can get it down to maybe about 70, 68, but yeah.
So you're going to have your work cut out for you over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully this stuff passes and we can quickly return them to their environmental chambers and get them back to normal. But yeah, for now, we're kind of on edge.
So how do you tell if a snail's in distress?
So our native snails are actually nocturnal. So during the day, they seal up to a leaf surface or a flat surface. Obviously, in these cages, they can seal up to the edges of the plastic terraria. So if they're sleeping during the day, they're totally fine. Everything's fine. But if they're walking around looking for a new place to hang out, they might be a little too hot, or it might be too bright, or... So if they're awake during the day, we know they're unhappy, and we got to do something.
So can you turn the air con down or up?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've kind of jerry-rigged the air conditioning to blow in a more direct path towards our snails.
Okay, but it's not like the building has, you know, automatic shutoff, right, that it shuts off over the weekend or anything like that?
So they do, but because of the hurricane, we're actually, DLNR has their headquarters within the setup within the building. So they actually do have power, and I believe they'll be keeping it on over the weekend.
Okay, is there generator power in case there's an outage?
No, so oh. That's why we have the ice packs and stuff. Our main concern with, and the whole reason why we moved them out of the trailer is because we don't think that the trailer can handle wind events. Once the winds have died down and the flooding isn't an issue, we will return them to the lab. We do have a generator that runs on natural gas. So if we don't have power in the grid, we can run our generators to sustain their environmental chambers.
Okay, so where did these snails come from originally?
So we actually have a little over 20 different species of snails from across the islands. We have Partulina physa, which is actually from Kohala. We have a lot of Akatanellas, which are endemic to Oahu, both the Ko'olau ranges, the Ko'olau range and the Waianae range. And we also have snails from Lana'i and believe we have some from Maui with us as well.
So how long have they been in this trailer?
So our captive rearing lab has been running since, I believe, 2016. So a little less than 2 years we've been caring for these snails. Prior to that, they were at a rearing lab at the University of Hawaii.
Okay, and then the problem is these are what, very, very endangered, critically endangered maybe?
Yes, critically endangered. Some of them are imperiled. There's examples of, we have one species where we only have, we have the last surviving individual known.
Wow.
In captivity. There are others where we have less than 10 individuals. And others range in the hundreds. So they're all at different levels of survival here.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, they're almost extinct.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just a race against time, trying to keep the few that we've got alive, whether it's a predator or a hurricane.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, you know, with this job, we can prepare as much as as humanly possible for, you know, these natural events. But, yeah, we just got to wait and see.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. You only have one left of that snail.
Yeah.
Where did that one come from?
So, Lonesome George is from the Northern Ko'olau area.
Lonesome George.
Yeah.
Why'd you guys name him that?
Oh, we try to stay cheerful and and humanize our snails.
So, do you have names for the other snails or what?
Yeah, there are names for others.
Like what? Just rattle them off.
So we have Emmett. He is a Akatanella lila from Northern Ko'olau. We have Bernice and Emma and Ruth. They are Akatanella fulgens from the Southern Ko'olau. Yeah, so we try to name our snails to make them important to us.
Okay, well, they're family, I guess.
Yes.
You're taking care of them, so
yeah.
Rightly so. That was DLNR's Kapa'ahi talking about last week's snail save. We recorded that interview Friday afternoon, and at last check, Lonesome George and the snail gang were returned to Windward Oahu this weekend. This is The Conversation on listener-supported Hawaii Public Radio. We now check in with Christopher Phillips and Dave Lawrence with your Monday Stargazer.
Stargazer time, our weekly look into the massive universe around our tiny planet and also things we can try and spot in our dark island skies. As usual, we are so grateful for the expertise of Christopher Phillips to help guide us in this endeavor, and we welcome him back right now. Hey, Christopher, welcome back. What do you got for us this week?
Hey, Dave. It's good to be back. So this week, Stargazers, a quartet of bright planets will span the sky. Venus can be seen in the west after sunset, with Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn all visible in the southern parts of the sky. The moon this week is waning, and by week's end, darker skies will return, as will perfect conditions for stargazing.
Speaking of conditions, certainly folks in the islands know we've had some very stormy conditions, serious in some spots, lighter in others. And meanwhile, in the solar system, I understand you've got a little bit of a weather report for us.
Indeed I do. And as you mentioned, as the storms of hurricane season here on Earth get underway, an enormous planet-wide storm is coming to an end on the planet Mars. This phenomenal dust storm was whipped up by hurricane-force winds that sent Martian desert dust into the atmosphere and shrouded the red planet in an event that has lasted since May this year. The storm was so fierce that the skies darkened, forcing the rover Opportunity to go into low power mode, essentially going to sleep until the sun came back out.
An Opportunity, that rover is still functioning, huh? That was launched quite a long time ago.
Yeah, 14 years ago, to be exact. Opportunity was very much alive and kicking ever since landing on Mars back in 2004. The tiny solar-powered rover's mission was only supposed to last 90 days, but Opportunity just didn't want to quit.
And is it going to resume functioning after this?
Well, I wouldn't write off Opportunity just yet, even though there's a good chance that some of the solar panels may be covered in Martian dust. NASA engineers are listening to any signals that may indicate that the rover is trying to phone home, so now it's a waiting game.
Do they have little things that clean the solar panels off?
Unfortunately, they do not. Now, you'd think that they would install something like windscreen wipers on the solar panels, but in this case, we just have to wait for Martian wind to basically blow them clean.
And what kind of faults could there be when the rover does try to wake up?
Well, it's possible that the rover's internal clock may have shut down or drifted off, which means that the rover might not know how long it's been asleep, or even what time of day it is. There may also be some communications problems, but the little rover is pretty clever. It will run some diagnostics and try to fix any issues before it attempts to call home.
And what would it call home about? Just to say, hey, I'm still functioning.
Hey, I'm awake, and this is what's broken.
Well, very good. We'll be, I guess, waiting for a potential signal from this little guy. Is that the next thing?
Hopefully in the next week or so.
Christopher Phillips, thank you so much for the report.
You are welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. Catch you next week for Stargazer, which can be found at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for Stargazer comes from Urgent Care Hawaii. Walk-in clinics in Pearl City, Kailua, Kapolei, and Waikiki. Providing employers with occupational medicine and workers' compensation services. AmazingUrgentCare.com.
Earlier in the show, we looked back at the days when the Scenic Express ran along Hawaii Island's Hamakua coast, offering passengers a chance to feast on spectacular views and sumptuous food as they dined in style and comfort. Now, the railway line was built between 1909 and 1913 to service the sugar mills north of Hilo. The passenger service was a sideline of sorts. The sugar industry was a real economic driver, but it became a real tourist attraction. Now, the express had to cross the streams and the valleys along the Hamakua coast, and that made for great sightseeing. The trip included dozens of steel trestles and 3,100 feet of tunnels, and that's why it was one of the most costly railways, mile for mile, that had ever been built. We asked you for its name. It started life as the Hilo Railway, chartered in 1899 and reorganized after a 1916 bankruptcy as the Hawaii Consolidated Railway. And the winner today was George Martin from Hilo, who shares that his grandpa was a station attendant at the Pai Aloha Station. That's today's quiz, and if you have an idea for one, you can send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Across the island, there was lots of uncertainty and anxiety as we began to see the floodwaters rise and the fires claim homes on the big island in Maui. Now, on the rest of the islands, many of us were wringing our hands, worried about getting our share of storm damage. But HPR's Ku'uwe Hiraishi shares some of the stress-relieving action that was going on online. Morning.
Good morning, Catherine. That's right. So a very uplifting story. I think a perfect way to kind of get out of this stormy weather and uncertainty. There was a social media challenge that was posed last Friday. So we were about 2 days into the storm. By then, a lot of people were at home waiting it out, stuck at home with the kids, and they already cleaned their house. They cooked all the food, and they were like, okay, these, what's driving us nuts? What are we going to do? Singer and songwriter from Kane'ohe, Leanne Anoinoi Punua, posed a challenge on Facebook. She grabbed her ukulele with her daughter and was like, okay, anybody who's out there who's holed up just like me, get on your social media, post a song about where you are or about your hometown, and upload it to Facebook. We're going to do a Kanikapila challenge is what it was called. It was. And veteran radio personality Mele Apana sums it up perfectly here with this. She also put in a rendition of her own song.
Aloha, everybody. Big mahalo to our sister, Anuenue Punua, for doing this hashtag Kanikapila Kapo. It was so beautiful to see all of our family and friends share their music, all of our social media uplifting each other with music. You know, music is medicine. And so I'm going to share with you a song from my home, the beautiful island of Kauai. Even through the storm, even through the rain, Kauai is still beautiful. Here is Nani o Kauai. I told you.
That's right. And also a beautiful singer, Mento Mele. So nearly 100 uploaded videos. Videos were still being uploaded this morning for those folks late to the game. But more than 100,000 views. So a lot of families out there who were kind of waiting it out were sort of being entertained,
That's so cute.
This music. It really was. And I was especially enjoyed these sort of tributes from folks that were in heavily affected areas. So Kapua Perkins, a Lahaina native, did a beautiful rendition of Puamana, kind of a shout out to those folks affected by the fires in Lahaina and also Lahaina Luna, her alma mater. But then you also had Nahoku Hano Hano Award winners who anyone would sort of pay top dollar to see in concert, Kainani Kahonaele, Kuana Torres Kahele, doing these impromptu performances in their backyard, in their pajamas, and it was really beautiful, raw talent. But there were some sort of amateur folks who were like, I don't normally do this, but I'm bored out of my mind. I'm going to put something up and share a song from my, area. And they really kind of did whatever they could. If they didn't have a ukulele, there was some acapella, some hula, slacky. There was this one instance in entire families out in Waianae. There was this one auntie who was going around and grabbing all her neighborhood keiki and like, okay, get over here. We're going to sing this song about Nanakuli because we're supposed to, we got to chime in and show up for this Ekani Kapila Kako challenge. But Nui Nui Punua, who sort of started this, when she put it out there, she really thought she was just going to have fun with maybe a few of her friends that wanted to chime in. But she was really overwhelmed with a lot of the response that she got from folks that she, I think there was one guy in Chicago, a Hawaiian group, who chimed in and did a little Ekani Kapila challenge, or they went up to the challenge. But here she is, kind of Anue Noe, talking about what she hopes to come out of this.
So even though the hurricane was the reason why we stopped everything and we're kind of pushed in this position to do something like that, I hope the lesson continues that don't stop. Bring music back into our homes, bring music back into our lives, make it a regular thing, and
That was right, and that's really what she's hoping to do. It was interesting to see a lot of the folks after this come out, music producers saying, hey, let's compile all these songs and make a Hurricane Lane CD with these Nohoku Hano Hano Award artists and these amateur, like, these hidden talents that we never saw before this who decided to just upload their, their video to Facebook.
So it's kind of like a flash mob or a reality reality concert.
I thought it was, what I liked about it was that it was a really uniquely local way of passing time and also sort of weathering the storm by bringing all these families together and all these musicians and maybe amateur musicians together at a time when, it was deeply needed.
Okay, nice way to de-stress.
It was perfect.
All right, thanks so much. That was HPR reporter Kuve Hiraishi. You can find the full story on HawaiiPublicRadio.org.
On the next Fresh Air, remembering Senator John McCain in two interviews with Terry Gross. He talks about his years as a prisoner of war during the Vietnam War, his criticisms of how the White House and top military brass conducted the war, his deep objections to the use of torture as an interrogation technique, and why he remained loyal to the Republican Party despite his disagreements with some of the party's most conservative views. That's this afternoon at 3.
We have to go, but up tomorrow, we will distract you from storm stress with more music. This time, Gypsy Jazz. We'd like to get feedback from you. Call our talkback line. Leave your comments. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Post comments on Facebook at The Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation. If you missed any of the show, find the shows on our Conversation page with links to more information about guests and topics. Look under HPR News and Talk for The Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.